From MainePublic.org, I'm Barbara Caridi, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Friday, September 23rd, 2016. And on this day, the LePage administration is putting the brakes on a multi-million dollar contract to refurbish public transit vehicles for the Boston area system. Some longtime advocates of legalizing marijuana in Maine say they're opposed to a measure on the ballot that would do just that. We'll tell you why. And the remains of a Civil War veteran from Maine are finally brought home to rest. Those stories and more after this. This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and Kennebec Valley Community College, offering a late start semester beginning September 26th. kvcc.me.edu. I'm Barbara Caridi. The administration of Governor Paul LePage is putting the brakes on a multi-million dollar contract to refurbish public transit vehicles for the Massachusetts Bay Transit Authority. Fred Bever reports that the project seems to be a bad deal for Maine.
In 2014, the Maine Military Authority won a $19 million contract to rehab 32 articulated commuter buses for the Boston area transit system known as the MBTA. The goal was to stem job losses at the Loring Development Authority. Susan Falloon, who's been assigned spokeswoman on this issue by the LePage administration, says it recently became apparent that the deal was a money loser for Maine.
That the contract to complete the work was underbid significantly and that the contract would need to be revisited. So in an effort to prevent additional loss of taxpayer money, state officials are considering halting the work until the contract details can be revisited.
More than 50 workers have been employed by the contract at the limestone facility, and they have completed about a third of the buses, Falloon says. She says job losses or layoffs are possible. But until a more thorough analysis is done, she says, it won't be clear exactly how the situation developed or how it will be managed. State officials say they plan to renegotiate contract terms with Massachusetts officials and, quote, act appropriately. A spokesman for the MBTA could not immediately be reached for comment. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Meanwhile, Bath Iron Works has announced that it plans to lay off 30 workers as part of a long-term plan to eliminate 160 positions. But Rich Nolan, president of the Machinists Union Local S6, says those layoffs won't affect union members.
As I understand salaried personnel, it will not affect any of members of Local S6.
There have been concerns that up to 1,000 people could be laid off as a result of the shipyard's failure to secure a $10.5 billion contract to build a new generation of Coast Guard cutters. But the company says this isn't related to that. Rather, in a statement, officials say the company is cutting the positions in the engineering and support organizations as part of ongoing efforts to be more affordable. After the 30 layoffs announced today, BIW officials say the remaining reductions will be realized through retirements, transfers, resignations, and canceled job postings. And Maine has joined with 35 other states in suing Indivior, the maker of Suboxone, a drug widely used to treat opiate addiction. The suit alleges that the company conspired to keep Suboxone prices artificially high. Mal Leary has more.
Attorney General Janet Mills says Maine joined the lawsuit because the maker of the drug conspired with others to keep the price of the drug high even after a generic version of the tablet should have become available. She says while no dollar estimates are available, she believes Maine has been hard hit by the higher prices because of the severity of the state's opiate addiction problem. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
The lawsuit alleges that Indivior worked to come up with a dissolvable film version of the drug that was only slightly different from the tablet version. It then stopped selling the tablet in the U.S., where the patent had run out, and would only sell the more expensive film version here, while continuing to sell the tablet in other countries. And you can read that entire lawsuit on our website, mainepublic.org. Coming up, why some pot legalization advocates are opposing Maine ballot question one, and the long, strange journey home for the remains of a Maine Civil War veteran. One of the big questions raised by the ballot initiative to legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana in Maine is what effect it will have on the state's medical marijuana program and the mom-and-pop economy that has created. Right now, there are nearly 3,000 registered caregivers operating as small businesses and 8 dispensaries growing and selling marijuana to more than 24,000 certified patients. Supporters of Question 1 say it's designed to keep the medical program intact. But in our ongoing series, High Stakes, Susan Sharon reports that patients and caregivers are divided over the ballot measure, and even some longtime pot legalization advocates are opposed.
Maine is considered to have one of the most successful medical marijuana programs in the country. And right off the bat, Question 1 appears to give caregivers and patients an advantage in the new marketplace. It calls for recreational marijuana to be taxed at a higher rate than medicinal marijuana, 10% versus 5.5%. It also suggests that certain caregivers will get priority for cultivation licenses. But for some caregivers and patients, there is more than a little skepticism that it will be beneficial for their bottom line.
If you're finding that this does help your mom, we actually have a tincture that we can get for you.
In the kitchen of her Manchester home, caregiver Catherine Lewis is discussing a hemp-based product that doesn't require a prescription with one of her regular patients, Tom, who asked that we not use his last name.
It works on a lot of different things for pain and anxiety.
Cool.
So have her try it. Let me know what you think. Okay?
Good. Thank you.
Remember, the CBD one.
Tom is a veteran who says he's been prescribed 6 medications to treat PTSD and chronic pain over the past 2 years, but he says he didn't find relief until he tried medical marijuana. He likes the privacy and convenience of having a caregiver, and he's worried about passage of Question 1.
From what I've heard about it, it's just going to ruin the medical marijuana aspect of everything. I think it's fine just like it is. I don't think we need a Colorado up here.
The concern is that there will be more regulations than there are right now, more government scrutiny, higher licensing fees, and higher prices for pot. Catherine Lewis, who also serves as the board chair and director of education for the Medical Marijuana Caregivers of Maine, says her members are so divided over Question 1 that the trade association has declined to take a position on it. But speaking for herself, Lewis is opposed.
The way that the language is written for growers in the adult use bill is that part of the licenses will go to these larger grows, and then there'll be, I believe it's 40% to the smaller grows.
But, says Lewis, there's a catch. Under the terms of the bill, municipalities can choose to limit the number of retail licenses or impose moratoriums on them altogether. Her biggest fear is that caregivers will be seen as unnecessary, and the medical program will sunset in a new marijuana economy dominated by big business. Others say there are adequate protections for small growers in Question 1.
I don't see something that's more favorable to the non-Walmarts of weed.
Aaron Worthing of Cape Elizabeth is a medical marijuana caregiver who not only plans to vote yes, but who hopes to qualify for a recreational cultivation license. For him, what's attractive about Question 1 is that small businesses like his have even been given a fighting chance.
The point of entry is accessible to all sizes of cultivators.
And, says Worthing, there's never going to be another marijuana legalization measure that will do more to level the playing field. Tom Falby of Old Orchard Beach points to Colorado as an example of where both the recreational marijuana market and the medical one are able to coexist. The number of medical marijuana cardholders has dropped off, but only by about 7%, according to analysis by Greenwave Advisors.
I think that there's a lot of assumptions that it's one or the other. You know, it's this or it's that, and it can be both.
Falby is a caregiver and a patient who uses medical marijuana to treat complications from Lyme disease. He says he has no plans to stop growing for other patients and he remains confident that any threats to the medical program can be ironed out by the legislature. But some opponents aren't counting on that. They're taking their grassroots message on the road to small, informal gatherings like this one at a pub in Stoneham, Maine.
I would not consider it legalization in any sense of the word. Any criminal penalties for possession that are currently in place right now will still be in place if question one passes.
Hillary Lister has been an advocate for medical cannabis and hemp for the past decade. She helped gather signatures for Maine's medical marijuana initiative in 2009. She sees question one as creating more barriers for caregivers, putting many of them out of business.
One of the major pieces of this legislation is a canopy cap. It's an 800,000 square foot canopy cap for recreational cultivation of cannabis. The only other state that has had a canopy cap in its bill has been Washington State.
And, says Lister, the result in Washington is that medical growers are now required to get a recreational license or shut down their operations. They must also track their production from seed to point of sale. On top of that, a patient registry has been created. Lister says she doesn't see the need for more regulation or disruption of the medical marijuana program when Maine is already so close to legalization. The operator of Maine's largest medical marijuana dispensary takes a different view.
We're in favor of legalization because we believe this would be the way to provide more access to people who, as of now, do not have access to it.
Patricia Rossi says patients who suffer from migraines or insomnia, conditions that aren't currently included in the medical marijuana program, could improve the quality of their lives with that access. Rossi is the CEO of Wellness Connection, which serves 13,000 patients in four locations in Maine. She says the recreational marijuana market here is estimated at between $200 to $300 million, so there's plenty of room for everyone.
We will never leave our patients behind, but do we want to be part of whatever becomes this industry at large? Absolutely.
In all actuality, it says legalized marijuana, you know, and I love that. But it doesn't. It just doesn't. And it's chicanery. It's a lie.
At 63, Don Kristen of Starks is Maine's best-known pot activist. He's advocated for legalization for more than two decades, spent nearly 2 years in jail on possession, cultivation, and trafficking charges, and this spring smoked a joint on the Somerset County Courthouse steps to celebrate the cannabis counterculture's favorite holiday, April 20th. Yet Kristen won't support question one because it doesn't allow people like him to expunge their felony convictions for growing pot, and because he thinks it creates a system of winners and losers.
When you put a law in place that limits the amount of people that can participate in the law, then the people that aren't eligible are going to just say, you know, we're going to do what, you know, we're going to do.
And Kristen says, based on his experience, what they're going to do will probably be illegal. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Down in Washington, Maine Senator Angus King is taking issue with so-called bill riders. King says important bills, including a continuing resolution to prevent a federal government shutdown October 1st and the National Defense Authorization Act, are being held up by issues often unrelated to those bills. The independent senator cites the effort by some lawmakers from western states to attach a rider that would limit efforts to preserve dwindling populations of the greater sage grouse.
A perfect example is the National Defense Authorization Act, which my understanding is now being held up by the sage grouse.
Some lawmakers representing those western states are worried that if the sage grouse is listed as an endangered species, it will mean stricter restrictions on oil and gas exploration, grazing, and other human-related activities. An estimated 500,000 of the birds live in the West, down from a peak of about 16 million. King acknowledges that the sage grouse issue is important to the 11 western states that are home to the bird, but he says efforts to limit its protection should not be holding up measures like the National Defense Authorization Act, which he says, quote, supports our men and women all over the world. And now to the long, strange saga of a Maine Civil War veteran. The cremated remains of Private Jewett Williams will be interred Saturday at the Hodgdon Cemetery, 151 years after he mustered out of the 20th Maine Volunteer Infantry Regiment and 94 years after his death. But as A.J. Higgins reports, his descendants in Aroostook County say they're glad to finally welcome him home.
The day was April 9th. The year was 1865, and the place was Appomattox Courthouse in Virginia, where General Robert E. Lee formally surrendered, bringing an end to the Civil War. Also present during that historic moment were members of the 20th Maine Regiment, led by Major General Joshua Chamberlain, who famously ordered his troops to salute their former adversaries. Among the Union soldiers complying with that order was Jewett Williams, a native of the southern Aroostook County town of Hodgdon.
When he got out of the Civil War, he didn't re-enlist. He came home. He had unfortunate time when he got home.
Eugene Jackins of Holton is Williams' first cousin, three times removed. He says he'd heard his ancestor mentioned a few times, but didn't know much about him, other than he had returned to Maine, got married, and then divorced, and then moved west. No one in Hodgdon ever heard from Williams again until last year, when his cremated remains were discovered in a locked shed on the grounds of the Oregon State Hospital for the Insane, along with the ashes of nearly 3,500 other patients. Jackins says it was unlikely that his cousin was able to tell hospital officials much about his past.
Because he had some senility. In those days, if something happened with you, that your head was gone, couldn't think, he's 78 years old, worked his life. He went to that insane asylum, and he's only there 3 months when he died.
Although because it was not known a year ago that Williams had descendants in Hodgdon, efforts were initially made to bury his remains at Togus National Cemetery in Chelsea, where other members of the 20th Maine were also laid to rest. Jackins said the plan was to accept an offer last month from the Patriot Guard Riders, a group that attends the funerals of U.S. military veterans, firefighters, and police, to relay Williams' ashes by motorcycle to Maine.
I think it was, an honor to be selected as one of the states that his cremains are going through. Like I have stated before, it's the ultimate respect that we can do.
Dario Bell said members of his Idaho Patriot Guard felt duty-bound to assist in returning the Civil War veterans' remains back to Maine. A formal ceremony will take place at 2 p.m. Saturday, when Williams will be buried next to his parents with full military honors in the Hodgdon Cemetery. The public is invited to attend, and a reception will follow at the Mill Pond Elementary School. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
And finally, here's meteorologist Paul Cousins with the forecast.
Northern residents of Maine have already bid summer adieu. Tonight, southern citizens will do the same. Canadian polar air has finally arrived. An isolated shower or two will exit coastal Cumberland, York County this evening. Breezy. A few clouds linger over the mountains tonight, otherwise complete clearing. 38 to 49 north to south by dawn. Tomorrow, brisk, mostly cloudy Millinocket North, limited sun, western, central, and down east Maine. More sun than clouds, Fryeburg, Brunswick South, 53 north, 67 south. Sunday will be the coolest day since early June, blustery as well. Once again, mostly cloudy north, western and central, down east Maine, an even blend of sun and clouds. Portland South, nearly full sun, 52 to 62 north to south. Monday will be more seasonable, mostly sunny statewide, very tranquil, 58 to 67 north to south. Our next round of showers arrive Tuesday, and temperatures will continue to rebound. 70 is a good bet, a bit cooler right along the coast. Even warmer Wednesday. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for Maine Public.
And that's the news on this day in Maine, Friday, September 23rd, 2016. Robert Holt composed our theme music. Thanks to our news leaders, Keith Shortall, Susan Sharon, and Andrew Catalina, and to Fred Bever, Mal Leary, A.J. Higgins, Ed Morin, and Nora Flaherty for their contributions. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the podcast. You can rate and comment in iTunes, or you can email us at tdim@mainpublic.org. I'm Barbara Caridi. For all of us here at mainpublic.org, thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.